not a con.
So my name is Bradman. I founded an art group called ACID, or NC Creators in Demand, about 15 years ago in September 1990. So I'm going to speak a little bit about that. The name of the speech is called Steering an Art Collective. So yeah, I'm basically going to talk about what it was like to run ACID for 14 years, what prompted me to do that, and maybe share a few stories. Basically what happened, the way ACID was formed, was I was in the BDSM scene in the late 80s. I joined up in a group because in the late 80s and the 90s, it was the big thing to do was join a group. You had to be in a group to get on a board. They would ask, what are your affiliations? You know, and you'd have to name up all your affiliations. And if you couldn't get into a group, then you would, you know, basically you'd form your own group. So, the first group that I formed actually was a hacker group called HEAT, which of course had an acronym, stood for Hackers Enterprising Across Telecommunications. We released one magazine, Lost of Time. And then I started to see stuff, started to see really cool ANSI art on some of the BDSs by a group called Aces of ANSI Art. So I downloaded the draw, tried it out, I created a logo for my hacker group called HEAT, and submitted it to them and was accepted. And after a few months being in the group, we kind of I started to recruit other members into the group, started calling out other boards within Northern America, Canada, the East Coast, California, everywhere in between, and basically started growing the group into more than what it initially was, which was mostly a California-based group, or mostly a Northern California-based group with a few exceptions. So after a while of doing that, a couple things happened by accident or not. What ended up happening in Aces of ANSI Art was the board, in order to become more elite, locked out all the local callers to the bulletin board. So this was kind of a way of signifying, we're so fucking cool, we're only going to accept people on our board that are from out of state or out of our area, because we're probably freaking get here, or, you know, we're having to pay a long-distance toll charge in order to call this BDS. We don't want local lamers. So that's what they did. And by doing that, they ended up locking out a significant chunk of the members of the group that they were headquarters for on this particular bulletin board, which was called Nuclear Wasteland. Looking back, I mean, I'm still actually in touch with the sysop of this bulletin board. And so, you know, it might be revisionism here, but he contends that, you know, that was not, that was, you know, that was an accident, or that wasn't necessarily meant to be that way, but, you know, an oversight or something like that. But, you know, we didn't see it that way. We're all teenagers, so we're like, oh, fuck you. We're going to go start our own group then. This is the last straw. You know, we're doing everything for this group, so we're going to start our own. And so I started speaking with some of the members that I had recruited into Aces of ANSI Art and said, you know, okay, we need to go start our own crew. And so we threw some names around. ACID came out. And then the backronym for that was ANSI Creators in Demand. So we started that. We recruited all the people that initially got into AAA and started the group from there. So when we first started the group, we were five members. We had four artists and one SZA. It was myself, Shadow Demon, Grim, the Beholder, and Phantom, who was the SZA of our world headquarters. He was the first bulletin board to distribute ACID ANSI artwork. And from there, we just kind of continued to grow and grow and do the same things that I would basically do the same things that I was doing in Aces of ANSI Art, which was calling around, looking for talent, basically being a talent scout for the group, promoting the group and such. And in a number, I think it was between 1990, from 1990 to 1996, we grew to from five active members to 144 concurrently active members. So I can illustrate that here. This is actually a 1991 member list. I don't have a pretty one to show on the screen from 1990. You can basically just axe, you know, these two guys and add in Phantom vs. Sizzop. Let's see here. This is the member list at the close of 96, and it's significantly longer. And you see that it's gone from just artists to a number of different subdivisions. We have an advisory staff, we have secretaries, and then, of course, artists, which is the core of the group. Musicians, coders, BBS modifications. So these were people who took enhancements of a bulletin board system one step further. So instead of just doing ANSI art to make the bulletin board look nicer, they would actually code different features into the BBS and then release them to the public so everybody could have these extra features. So these are called BBS mods. We had an AIS division, which was, at this time, we were starting to make our foray into the internet by 96. So we had a division specifically for that. Telecom couriers. Now, this is kind of an interesting division. This started off, we first had our first courier division in 1993, an official division. That was actually telecom division started in 1993. Courier was a little bit earlier than that. But the reason that we formed these two divisions, the first one was the courier division, was for the express purpose of making sure that our artwork and our art packs were spread out to all the other bulletin boards in the world. So their job was to take our art and make sure it was populated everywhere else, because there was no, at the time, there was no real, like, way, there's nobody had internet connections or anything like that. So you'd have to manually call up a board, send the file to this person, and then hang up from that board and call the next board and so on. And that was pretty costly to do. So we had members recruited that couldn't necessarily draw that would specifically do that. And then the telecom division, their job was basically communications, to make sure that we had the ability to talk to everybody, because we were quickly growing from, you know, a North American group to a global group. And that required a lot of costly phone calls. So their job was to find a way to make those phone calls one way or another. So this member list is kind of going forward a lot. It wasn't for a few years that we started to get into music and other divisions. Let me see here. I mentioned art packs. What those were, basically, in 1992, we had gone to a point where we had so much artwork to upload manually one at a time to all these different bulletin boards that we needed a method in which to send all of this art more efficiently. And so rather than upload each individual piece of art one at a time, somebody suggested, well, why don't you just zip it up? You know, that would make a lot more sense than uploading all these files one at a time and then describing them and entering a one-line description for each one. Just make an archive. And like, yeah, that's so stupidly obvious. Why didn't we do that in the first place? So, but a really interesting thing happened. We created the first art pack like a few months prior to June, and then we started just basically doing it on a monthly basis, starting with the June 92 pack. And what this, other ANSI art groups out there saw this, and they started to do the same thing. And what this led to basically was a monthly competition. So, I mean, it sounds kind of funny that you're competing in the field of art, but when you take, you know, again, if you have teenagers involved, there's, you know, the competitive nature, inherent nature of teenagers are there. So we would release an art pack 1 month, and then a competing art group such as ICE or Mirage would release an art pack in response to this. And then so we'd have basically these groups competing to put out the most art or the best art. And there were certain times where, you know, a group wouldn't be able to meet. One group would do 40 and the other one would do 35. So they'd say, oh, we won. And then, you know, they'd have to say something else like, yeah, but we're having quality over quantity. You know, ours is better quality than yours and this and that. So that went on. Let's see. We released those on the first of every month. And that was a pretty big deal to have the packs released on time. We had a really strict schedule. And in order to In order to meet these deadlines, the telecom division of ACID came in very handy. We would schedule what were called alliance teleconferences, and basically that would bring together all of the members of ACID at once onto the calls, and we could just basically would have like 30 people on the phone together speaking all at the same time, and these conferences wouldn't just be like a 1 hour conference. These conferences could go on for like 2-3 days straight. And what's that? Yeah, on the telephone. It was to the point where I could, if you had a dedicated line, you could leave the, you could basically go to school that morning and then leave the phone off the hook. Come back when you got home from school at 3:30 or 4 o'clock or whatever, pick it up, and people would still be there from different parts of the world, talking about really anything. A lot of the times, it had nothing to do with, you know, underground BBSs or ANSI/ARD or anything like that. It was just they're just BSing with each other, and just kind of, you know, building a camaraderie and stuff like that. So another interesting thing about the ACID teleconferences were the way in which we brought people in. One of our best artists was named Jed, and he was very famous for doing his ANSI animations. But he was never on an ACID conference. He was kind of like this enigma that nobody ever knew, you know, who he was or what he sounded like or anything like that. And the reason for this was because he had the voice of like, well, he was recruited in ACID, I think, at the age of like 11 or 12, which is really astounding because he's probably the best ANSI animator ever. And you can imagine if you haven't yet gone through puberty or anything like that, the pitch of your voice is very high, and other kids in the group, because basically we're all kids in our teens, you know, they could be very judgmental, and this could get around, you know, Jed has this high-pitched voice or something like that. So he was never brought into the conferences. And then another thing that we would do is we would actually stack the order in how we'd bring people into the calls. So a big problem when you have 30 teenagers on the phone is moderating a discussion if you actually need to get something done. So the first thing that we would do is we'd bring in the senior members of the group and talk about whatever, you know, whatever the business was that needed to be taken care of. And then we would gradually bring in more members in, you know, more members into this discussion. So finally we'd bring everybody in, and there was a couple people on the fray that we always knew basically were the ones that eventually, as soon as we added them, there was about 10 minutes left of this being a really productive conference, and then it's just going to turn to hell and people will start doing, you know, prank calls and things like this, which were like a pretty normal thing for the conferences. Let's see. Just looking at other things. Eventually, in ACID, we built a reputation for ourselves as far as being an ANSI group. And it was kind of like a double-edged sword because we were recognized as the best or one of the two best ANSI groups in the world. And in the last 15 years, there have been over 450 ANSI groups. ACID is probably the second one ever to be created. The first that there's a record of is Aces of ANSI/ARD. So since Aces of ANSI/ARD and then ACID, there's been this lineage of 450 groups. And each group could be as small as two people, or it could be, you know, as big as ACID. There's a very small handful of groups that have had multiple hundreds of members. But the double-edged sword for being recognized as this ANSI group was we wanted to expand into other mediums because we saw ANSI as something that may not be around forever. We wanted to expand into high-resolution arts because this is kind of a blocky art that's limited to a bulletin board system. We wanted to get into other artistic things such as music and so on. So we started a music division, and a lot of our musicians, it was difficult, basically, to get a musician to join the group because they're like, well, you're an ANSI group. You know, what are you doing? And so in order to kind of deal with that, we started spinning off subsidiary groups. One was called Fluid. Then later on, we started another group called Acidic, which was responsible for the BBS modding, but that was more of a, that was a pretty logical extension of the group. And then later on down the road, we started another group called, or we didn't really start, we reformed a group called Remorse. There's two Remorse guys over here. And Remorse was a group that was dedicated to producing ASCII art. And so the differences between ASCII art and ANSI art in simple terms is basically that ASCII art is still produced with characters, but without color, without the color codes. And I just want to show a couple examples throughout the years of ANSI art. ANSI art is, it's kind of one of those things. ANSI itself stands for American National Standards Institute. And they developed, I mean, they're responsible for a number of standards. Yeah. And so the standard specifically that they developed that we are naming the art after is ANSI X3.64, that particular one. And that was like, I think that was created in the late 70s, like 1979, I think. But so we just, you know, that's too complicated. It's called ANSI art. And so you can kind of see how the art has progressed. This is some ANSI art from Aces of ANSI Art. Yeah. So this stuff was all created between the years of 1989 and 1991. I believe this one's animated, so. Yeah, it is. This was created, this particular ANSI was created by an artist named Mondo Man. He was one of the, after Acid left Aces of ANSI Art, it kind of dealt a devastating blow to the group because we took pretty much all of the active members. But they did kind of have a short kind of second coming, and Mondo Man was a part of that. He was a big part of that. So they would have otherwise died in 1990, but he kept the group going for about another year. And he did a number of really good ANSI animations. Probably between 1989 to 1993, the bulk of the ANSIs were like this. They had cute little ANSI animations. I mean, they're pretty simple. And this is about the same speed that they display at while you're connected to a BBS, maybe slower, depending on the speed of your modem. Oh, this one. This is the one I wanted to bring up. It's pretty neat. So, I mean, this standard was basically, this particular ANSI standard was basically designed as a standard method of communications between terminals. And so, it was never intended to be used for, you know, purposes of art. So it's kind of cool that, that's one of the cool aspects of this. And then you can just really see this is a nice feature. I'm using a program called Acid View to view these ANSIs. Normally you'd have to type them with DOS and have a specific device driver called ANSI Sys loaded in your config Sys in order to view these. But Acid was actually one of the first groups to start producing these viewers starting from the DOS days. And we've continued it on and, you know, continued to port this over to Windows. And it's become a pretty sophisticated program. And it allows you to, in real time, just kind of scale back. I mean, normally it would look about this large, really blocky. But if you wanted to, some of the larger ANSIs, see if I can find one like this. Normally this would scroll on a BBS, you know, one line at a time. But if you want to, you can just kind of, oh, this is what it would look like if I was standing 20 feet away from my computer screen or something like that. It's So these are some that were created in 92. And just jumping forward to 96, I mean, the level of quality and sophistication is just orders of magnitude better. It's really amazing. The interesting thing is that, in my opinion, the largest asset ever was 144 members concurrently. When I officially, quote-unquote, retired from running the group, we had about 720-some-odd members total, like, throughout the entire time. But there are still groups that do this, but it's much more of a labor of love. There's no practical reason, really. You know, bulletin boards barely exist at all today. There's the, you know, fraction of a percent compared to what there used to be at the height of, like, probably, I guess, the mid-90s. But people still do create this art today. Although ACID stopped, officially we stopped doing ANSI in 1997, so we could move and focus towards doing VGA and doing other forms of art. And that was a really hard decision to make. But the reason that we made that is we could see kind of the decline in bulletin boards coming. We knew that, you know, the internet was going to replace bulletin boards. And we didn't want to be hanging around just, we had kind of like this level of quality where we're releasing 30, 40 pieces of really good art every month. And we knew that that demand wouldn't be there, the number of artists wouldn't be there. And so we just kind of made a conscious decision to eliminate that group, that subgroup in ACID. Let's see. And so that's why you kind of see there's like 1997, and that's it. There's really no more ANSIs after that. But Remorse, on the other hand, still continues to do ASCII to this day. So just like, I think about a month ago, they put out an ASCII art pack. So they still continue to do art. It's a slightly different style, very rarely colored, although sometimes it is. So it's still kind of like an extension of ACID. What else can I talk about? Oh. As far as... okay. Yeah. Okay. As far as, like, the amount of time and dedication that it took, that's something that really, like, even if you expressed it in articulated it perfectly in words, I think it's really difficult to appreciate unless you've done it yourself. But basically, at the height of the competition within the ANSI art scene, it was so busy that as a freshman in high school, I was the only kid who had a pager, and this was at the time when you were a police officer or a doctor or a drug dealer. I mean, those were the three professions that you had in order to have a pager. And so I have my pager go off in class for something really, it was fucking important. It was immediate. I had to go use the payphone and, like, use my red box to call back and see what this super ACID emergency was. And, you know, it's going off during class, and the teacher's like, you know, what's, come up here, you know, and then he has this, he talks to me, he waits till after class, he's like, talk to me after class. Okay, fine. So I come up to him after class, he's like, Christian, this is really serious, you know, but why do you have this pager? Look into my eyes, tell me honestly, are you dealing drugs? No. Why do you have this? It's for business. I run a business. And he just accepted that, gave me the pager back, and that was it. Never left it on again in class. But, I mean, it was to the point that I actually carried a pager. And there were certain things, like, if somebody was trying to, for example, recruit another member out of ACID and into their competing group, that would warrant an emergency phone call that I had to call right away and find out what this groundbreaking news was. Or if there was a member that was looking to join ACID who was, like, a really superstar artist or, you know, something like that, that I actually took it so seriously that I went through all the things that it took to get a pager. I mean, at that time, you needed to, you know, go through a credit check and all this. I had to really social engineer my way into getting a pager at that age. other things, other ways that, what else? Basically, running an art group at that time was extremely time-consuming. So, like, it was pretty much a full-time job. So, it was something that if you let it and if you wanted to be one of the best groups, you would just, it would be, you'd come home, as soon as you got home, you would work on managing the group, contacting all the artists, seeing how they're doing, seeing, you know, what's the news out there, seeing if there's any rumors that somebody's spreading about your group, and keeping up to date on all of that, dispelling any rumors and such. It was very competitive, I guess. We were frequently challenged by other groups trying to get, like, there, for example, Jed was probably one of the prized artists within Acid, and nobody had his phone number except for me. In fact, none of our telecom members who were responsible for, you know, keeping in touch with everybody had his phone number. None of our couriers, sometimes we would assign a courier to pick up art from an artist. I was basically his personal courier. We had a very, you know, tight one-on-one relationship. And it was kind of like, at the time, it was ICE's big thing to do anything they could to recruit him in ICE. Anything. And so, somehow, and I'm pretty impressed, there was, at the time, one of the senior members of ICE, who went by the handle of Metalhead, managed to dredge up his phone number and contact him and do anything he could in order to persuade him to join ICE. And at the time, there was a really strict policy within the group, within Acid and most other groups as well, that you couldn't be a member of a competing group, because that was an obvious conflict of interest. The policy was called no dual grouping. And so ICE had the same policy, but he's like, oh, it's okay. This is actually in Jason Scott's BBS documentary. He's like, oh, it's okay, yeah. You can be in both groups, and we don't even care if you don't draw for us that much. Just do something once in a while. Just do a logo or something, and that'll be sufficient, you know. Just because he knew what it meant and what it signified in order to get that artist into his own group. And there was the same thing. There was a lot of contentions like that with members. Probably the first big one was by an artist called Martial Law. And let me see if I can find his... Yeah. Let's see. I think I know where it is. That's it. This is probably... let's see. This is one of the first full-length scrollers. Martial Law is one of the first artists to really kind of make people take a break from doing the ANSI animations and start doing these multiple line scrolling ANSIs, which are like, you know, hundreds of lines long. He was one of the first artists to do this. And the contention point was between him was he was in a group called RPM, which was one of the first groups to merge with Acid. But he was also in another group as well in his local area code. So he's kind of being, you know, there's a fight over whether he was in Acid or whether he was in ICE. And ultimately, he ended up releasing some ANSIs for both. But there was a number of contentions like that. Oh, okay. Yeah, going back to that. It was running Acid, throughout the course of running Acid, I actually skipped a lot of like family vacations because I was so dedicated to running this group, which I know seems kind of crazy in retrospect. But one vacation that I did go on was a skiing trip in Tahoe with my family. And I made a point of telling just like two people, two like high up members, high ranking members in the group, that I'm going to be on a ski trip for a few days here, you know, pay me if you need me, blah, blah, blah. And so they thought it would be really funny to start a rumor that I was dead and that I had gone on a ski trip and that I had died. And people fell for this because prior to me leaving for this trip, I was always available. If they called here, I would be getting back to them immediately. Or, you know, it was like as soon as I got home, the phone was ringing anyways. And so all of a sudden, you know, there was this Radman outage for 4 days straight. Oh, he must really be dead. And so from that point on, you know, well, it was just kind of like every time I went on vacation, every subsequent vacation that I took after that, they would kind of reinvent the Radman died scenario. And so whatever I did, I would die in some new kind of car accident or ski accident or whatever. And it was only the like new members who didn't really know the whole story behind that, the inside joke, that would fall for that. So it was kind of a quick way to sift out the newbies in the group. What else? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my mom really wanted me to find something else to do. Whereas my dad kind of, I think both of my parents actually, I was probably running the group to a point where it might have been borderline unhealthy, I think, but it was kind of, you know, a little bit too obsessive, but I knew that that's what was required of me in order to keep the group in its number one place. But at the same time, I think my parents really realized that I was gaining a lot from it. I was learning a lot from it. Not just learning how to use computers, obviously, and everything that comes along with just using a computer at that age, but working with people and, you know, social skills and such. In fact, there's another interesting story. In my younger years, I did a lot of phone phreaking. Basically phone phreaking is making free phone calls illegally. One of the times I was doing it, I got back billed for like $2,000 for like a month worth of calls, which, you know, probably isn't so bad. so it was only $2,000, fortunately. My dad was really upset. The punishment was you have to go get a job and pay me back, which was also difficult because I wasn't old enough to get like a food safety permit still. So I had to social engineer my way into getting that. And so I did that somehow, magically. I was blessed enough to get that and then got the job, worked the, you know, minimum wage until I could repay him back the money that I owed him. And the funniest thing was he took that money that, you know, I repaid him with, you know, for the phone bill, and he applied that towards a brand new computer for me to use. Yeah. So I think it was kind of like, I disapprove, but I approve kind of a thing. Like, this is kind of interesting. Maybe my mom didn't so much completely understand everything that was happening. But my dad was actually, he's very interested. He was kind of, one thing that he didn't like, which is kind of funny, he's like, oh, why is all the ANSI art so evil? He's like, what was the deal with the skulls and everything like this? And it progressively goes that way. But, I mean, later it's because there was a trend that later started that everybody started copying comic books. Like, a lot of these artworks are taken from, like Marvel comic books and stuff like that, and DC Comics and Image Comics, which was another trend that started. It seemed like martial law started doing scrollers, and everybody started doing scrollers, and then people just started doing comics. And it kind of got to a point, though, where nobody was doing original ANSI artwork anymore. They were just basically doing the hand-eye digitization of a comic book into ANSI art. But then one artist came along. Let's see if I can find some stuff. Named Lord Jazz. This stuff is by Lord Jazz. He was one of the first... Well, he pretty much was the first ANSI artist to consistently put out really good 100% original ANSI art. And not too many people, even to this day, can really match the level of quality that he was able to produce. He actually thought in the ANSI medium. He wouldn't need a reference point. He could just naturally type out. Really amazing. He did this piece of art. Well, I'll just use this as an example, though. Like, somebody would take a piece of, you know, a picture, a photograph, usually a comic book, put it right here, and then start drawing, replicating that within the anti-art media. So they weren't really creating their own art. They were taking somebody else's art and kind of transcribing it. Some people would, but the thing was that it was very rare for people to even do original art anyhow. It got to a point where people were concerned because they had this level of quality that they wanted to maintain, and they were kind of competing at one point really to just create the best reproduction of a particular comic book cover or something like that. And when Lord Jazz came around, kind of everybody stood up and took notice. Also, Lord Jazz was probably one of the fastest ANSI artists I've ever talked to. We had an idea 1 month for to put out a magazine in ANSI art, and we told him what we wanted him to draw, and over the course of like a 30-minute phone conversation, he's like, I'm done. You know, he's like, you know, connect to my modem, call me back, and you know, you can get this right now. So he's also one of the fastest ANSI artists that I know. Professionally, a lot of the people in ACID have gone on and kind of continued to do what they were doing in the group. Did you have a question? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like the old paint programs. Basically, if you're... Well, first, I think a good starting point would be, since you mentioned the Mac Paint and stuff, are you familiar with, like, pixel art? As far as creating a piece of artwork one dot at a time? Basically, anti-art, as far as the constraints or the constraint of the actual resolution, it's, like, 80 pixels across by 25 down. That's a really limited amount of pixels that you have to work with. Of course, if you go beyond that 25 down, it becomes what's called a scrolling ANSI. So this is obviously much more than 80 by 25. It's always 80 wide, but anything beyond the 25 is going to be scrolling. As far as the application of the medium, it was meant for before you're using like Internet Explorer and Mozilla and stuff to connect over the internet. I mean, people were using bulletin boards and modems to do the same types of online communication, and so that medium was the BBS. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly the same space. So you have that working space of the 80, you know, columns wide and 25 down. And so a lot of, you can, but it's
basically what you're seeing here is that if
sure. Yeah, the dollar signs. 96. This is the one that you want to see.
This is the guy named Phillips. This makes more sense because he's over here.
Yeah. Yeah. This is basically colored ASCII art. So it's a very thin line that you cross over before you're doing colored ASCII art and colored ANSI art. But the main delineation is, are you using the lower 128 original ASCII art characters, or are you using these blocks? So he does have a few blocks. This is kind of a hybrid. He actually called it ANSCII because he's doing ANSI art and ASCII art at the same time. He kind of throws in a couple throwbacks to ANSI art, but this is, for the most part, he's just using dollar signs. Like, you could almost reproduce this, at least the outline, on a regular typewriter. Those are higher up. I believe they're like one. Yeah. Okay, what were those, like 186? 219? Yeah. Yeah. I love this. It's great. This is one of his best. This is like one of his last pieces, too. Let's see if I can scroll it. That's how I view on a modem. So this is limiting. When I view this in the animated mode, it confines it to 25 lines. So this is the most you would see on the screen at any one time. So you'd actually have to make a mental image. What did I just see up here? Because you wouldn't see, there wouldn't be any scroll back. It's because I'm using Windows that I can have this huge scroll back buffer. But in DOS, you'd see his head. And there's actually a kind of an inside joke about that too, because some people started getting way too close up, and depending on these VGA mode viewing capabilities in order to see what the whole picture looked like. And so they're like, I can only fit the eyeball in 80 by 25. You're making the picture so big. His nose, you know, I'm not going to remember what this is. You're depending too much on the program and not what it was originally intended for. And that's what people started doing. They would just kind of, you know, forget the BBS thing. I'm just doing this art for the sake of art. And so there are a lot of different motives that artists had to create this art. Some of them were just doing it for the sole purpose of creating art. Other people did it for the recognition that they got within ACID or within the art scene. Other people did it for more of like a bartering. They used it as a bartering tool. So if they needed a piece of software, or if they wanted access to a bulletin board system that was maybe underground and needed to know somebody to get on it or have something to offer, the skill that they would offer, or the, you know, thing that they would barter with, was, I would draw you this piece of artwork in order for, you know, elite access on your BBS or something like that. And so there were a lot of different reasons that people were compelled to create this artwork. And a lot of them still hold true today, people that are still creating this artwork. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of these were the welcome screens. So when you'd first connect, when you first connect to a BBS, that's what you'd be greeted with. Hello, welcome to whatever the name this was called, Piranha. Yeah. So this is Killer Hertz at that time. That was as good as it gets, really. Yeah. And this is what it looks like standing 20 feet away. Like, if you want to see what it, you know, it really, let's see if I can, that's probably going to crash. Okay. Yeah, that didn't make it very happy. There we go. There we go. Speed up the modem speed. This is a really nice program. It emulates a number of different modem speeds, so I could go all the way up to 28.8 for this. I wish I would have selected one that like just has like an eyeball fitting in the 80 by 25 region. Yeah, exactly that. We would use terminal communication programs. Most people that I knew were using like Q modem or Procom Plus or Telemate or Telex. There were a number of different programs, but yeah, pretty much every program did emulate the ANSI BBS or IBM ANSI standard. Even Amiga and Mac terminal programs had the capability of doing this, because it just kind of turned into the de facto standard for terminal emulation that everybody used. Okay, we have about 5 minutes left. So, are there any other questions? Yeah. Initially, when I first started, we used a program called the Draw, which was created by Ian Davis, He stopped developing that in 1992. So I think when I started using it, I think it went up to 80 by 50. You can only do 50 lines at a time. Some of these are like 300 lines plus. His last version, I believe, did up to, I want to say 100. I could be wrong. Acid, you know, people, in order to create these longer ones, people would actually copy them together using the copy command in DOS and then kind of hope that they matched up in the line breaks. So Acid created its own ANSI editor called AcidDraw, and that supported up to 400 lines. So then you could create an even longer ANSI. And now there's a program called PabloDraw, which has been written for Windows. And that is a really neat tool. That actually allows you to do peer-to-peer ANSI or ASCII art creations in Windows with multiple users. It has a chat client built in, like IRC. So you could have yourself and five of your friends create this monstrosity of an ASCII or ANSI art piece, chat while you're doing it. You could work on this upper region. You could work on the lower region. And in real time, it's showing you this VGA side panel of what it looks like far away, so you can see to scale what it is you're producing. So there's a number of different programs that have been created to do this, but probably the three predominant ones would be the Draw, AcidDraw, and PabloDraw right now. And then as far as viewing, there's, at least for Windows right now, there's this particular application, AcidView. And there's also PabloView, which is created by the same guy. And those are both like freely available with source code on SourceForge. So you can pick up either one for free. Actually, there's a number. If you go to the Wikipedia ASCII art article, there's probably about 20 programs listed there. And some of the earliest ones were like GIF to ANSI, GIF to ASCII, but there's a lot of these image conversion tools. If you've ever gone to ASCIIBabes.com, which has like Gillian Anderson, you know, whatever, in ASCII, I mean, those are all automatic conversions. Generally speaking, when you... Well, yeah, if you're using GIF to ANSI, people are going to say you're lame because you're basically taking all the artistic interpretation out of the process and you're just letting a computer do all the work for you. And normally the results aren't as good and they're actually much, much worse, and it requires more cleanup than it would be to just start from scratch. And very rarely, unless you'd have to have something in perfect grayscale that matches this perfectly to have it come out right, or make it so large that it might as well be a bitmap to begin with. Like, the ASCII babes, to me, they're completely pointless because they're, like, you know, 500 column wide ASCII. What's the point of that? It might as well be 551. But if you're condensing something down to, like, 80 pixels, that's, you know, twice the width of a thumbnail in Windows. So, you know, it's very small. But, yeah, there's a large number of automatic image processors that'll render out to ASCII. One other thing that's really cool, there's something called AALib. Have you heard? Yeah. I have a copy of, I picked it up on a torrent download of The Matrix, which was completely rendered in ASCII and then run through a green filter. So you can, and the kind of like, the funniest scene is the very beginning where the text is kind of melting down the screen, and it's doing it in ASCII, and it's originally kind of ASCII to begin with, so it's kind of funny. But yeah, it fits on a DVD 5. It's like full quality ASCII conversion of The Matrix. Yeah. But the problem is with that, though, the only reason I think you can get away with it, and it has kind of a cool factor, is because it's The Matrix. But the reason you can get away with it is because it's animated. If you were to pause a screen and make a still screen, it looks like shit. I mean, it really looks bad. You'd have to totally clean up, and nobody's going to clean up, you know, hundreds of thousands of frames. But, I mean, that's the real difference. You can definitely see a difference in the quality level from a converter. Just pick one out of the list and try it, and then take a look at some of the other stuff that other people have created. But yeah, there's a number of sites. There's sites right now. There's Remorse has a site, remorse.org, which is really cool. What is the other one? There's a site called thuglife.org, which is an ASCII art portal, and they have basically links to all the other ASCII and ANSI art groups that are still active presently. The Wikipedia article is pretty good as far as general ASCII art goes. What else? There's a great article as far as ANSI art 2, which is still developing there. I'm trying to think of what other resources. There's the Dark Domain DVD. I should probably promote that. This has basically all of the ANSI art and ASCII art created by all 400 of the different groups that were on the scene, as well as other stuff such as magazines and stuff that were published by the groups from going back to 1987 to 2003, the close of 2003. And there's literally from these 400 groups, literally thousands of art packs, and each art pack contains dozens of different pieces of art. So, I mean, it's a really huge amount of art that was produced over the past 15 years or so. I think that's it. Yeah. I guess I could throw that in. My very first real job, my very first job was the job that I had to take working at a pizza restaurant. But my first real job was working for a networking company, and I had no real world experience, so I had to put something on the resume. So I put that I managed an art group, and I briefly explained what it was, and I said it was called Acid Productions. And the person in HR that's filing through the stack of resumes to hire, and he has another intern that's working with him, and he's going through the stuff. He's like, "Oh, that says Acid?" And then he looked at it, he's like, "I know who this person is, this intern that's reviewing the stuff with the HR person." He's like, "I know that guy." And he's like, "Yeah, hire this guy." And so I end up starting on my first day, and it's my other friend named Christian, who's handling Acid, his piano man. He's actually the first Acid musician ever to be in Acid. So, I mean, that's how I ended up getting my first job. And then I've been, following that same career path ever since. No, not really. We have a music division that does different types of genres, but it's not really related to Acid House at all. The payoff really has been getting to know all these people, sharing all these different experiences. A lot of the people that were in Acid, I guess I touched on this and went on to a different tangent. A lot of the people have continued to do artwork. A number of people, for example, are working in the gaming industry. Is the biggest natural transition. There's a number of people working for Electronic Arts. One of the senior members of Acid is now a executive at Bungie, the company that creates Halo for the Xbox. Artists, what's that? Oh, yeah. That was what else I was going to say, though. There's some people that have gone on to create the CGI for The Matrix and for Lord of the Rings. And a lot of people have just gone on to create their own internet ISPs and such. But it's just really interesting to see a lot of people kind of continue the path that they were in Acid and continuing to basically get paid for that and do what they loved when they were a teenager doing the same thing. So, pretty cool. Much higher resolution. It's much more sophisticated now. Yeah. Oh. Oh yeah. One of the first Acid VGA artists when we started going serious into the high res division. He did the tattoo work on my back. I got a tattoo from him last year. I guess a few months after, 2 months after last Nauticon. So I had known him for about 10 years, and we had never met in real life. So I traveled to Missouri, of all places, took a road trip, and went out and met him, hung out, and along the way, met a bunch of other Acid members that I had never met before. So it was really cool. I mean, yeah, that's it. He's telling me I'm cut off, but thank you.